Moncrief on News Talk.
On May the 9th, people will gather in the National Stadium in Dublin to celebrate the life of Dan Donnelly, who was a bare-knuckle boxer. Long after he died, his arm was famous, and not necessarily in the way you might think. The historian Donal Fannell will be hosting it. Good afternoon, Donal.
Good to be here. Good to be here.
So tell us something about Dan.
Yeah, what better place to commemorate him than in the National Stadium? And I mean, the National Stadium in more recent times makes people think about gigs. So if you were lucky, you would have heard...
But it's always been a boxing venue.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Bread and butter. I mean, it was purpose-built, the first purpose-built amateur boxing stadium anywhere in the world. It was quite amazing. But from Leonard Cohen singing The Ballad of Kevin Barry to Led Zeppelin playing Stairway to Heaven for only the second time ever, Morrissey's first proper solo show after the Smiths. It's a great venue which carries a lot of meaning for people. But Dublin 8 really is synonymous with Dan Donnelly, as well as being a bare-knuckle boxer. He was a publican. Only one of his pubs is still open for business, which is that great institution, my namesake, on the Coombe, John Ballon's.
And so where was Dan Donnelly originally from?
So Dan Donnelly was from Townsend Street, born the son of a carpenter, working class Dublin background, 1788. Like all of these kind of, he's a real street character in the history of Dublin. There's a lot of lore around him. And as is often the case with those kind of characters, there's inconsistency in the tale.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely. You know, this is literally oral history.
Exactly. So,
how did he become involved in boxing? Because I assume it wasn't as organised as it is today.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the rules were few and far between. But poor Paul Rouse had the difficult job of writing his life story for the Dictionary of Irish Biography, which is a really, really tough one to get. And he said, look, his life is one in which reality and mythology are not easily separated. But I think what makes this guy so important is arguably he's the first Irish sporting celebrity, as we would understand that to be. Mm. And he was the hero that the country needed at the time we needed one. You know, the early 19th century, when he comes to great prominence, steep decline, the abandoned Parliament on College Green, the Active Union. We're really in a bad place in the early 19th century. Ireland needs heroes. And a little bit like, you know, he recalls like maybe Arkell the racehorse later on. I think what makes Dan Donnelly so great is that the victories come over the old enemy.
Yeah, and that was, what was his first big victory?
Yeah, massive one. September 1814, on the Curragh of Kildare, he beats the English boxer Tom Hall. If he actually wins that fight now is disputed, to be honest.
Oh, right.
Some contemporary newspaper accounts argued convincingly that one ended in a draw. The rules at the time, going back to that point, the few and far between, I mean, eye gouging was totally fine. And if you dropped to one knee, as Tom Hall did consistently throughout the fight, then it had to be stopped briefly.
Okay.
So Tom kind of was stopping the bout at his own discretion. But an estimated crowd, 20,000 to 30,000 people were there to watch that fight. And the site where it happened, whether it was a draw or, you know, in the Irish case, we won a match 1-1. You know, that kind of story?
Yeah.
Whether it was a draw or whether it was a victory, the site became known as Donnelly's Hollow. And you just read the press reports, you know, the bonfires on the hillsides as Donnelly returns into Dublin. He does it again then in 1815, and he definitely wins this one against George Cooper, who was just a legendary boxer at the same site in the Curragh. But it should be said, like, the church didn't like this stuff. It's a very, very dim view towards boxing. The temperance movement didn't like it because these were very drunken occasions.
Yeah.
You know, people were gathering in their tens of thousands, watching a fight and often having a fight as well. But the folk hero dimension of it, I think, does come back to that fact that he's beating English opponents one after the other. On the Curragh, I mean, the Curragh itself is wrapped up in colonial history, you know, and the presence of soldiers. When you go there today, Donnelly's Hollow, you can still see this beautiful monument commemorating that victory over Cooper and these kind of legendary footprints, which they say are the steps of Dan Donnelly. So again, we're getting into this mythology being as important as history.
Now, I assume there were purses at these fights, but you probably couldn't live on that money.
No.
So at what stage did he first become a publican?
That's one of the real problems with Dan. I mean, not unlike fighters of more recent times, I don't think we have to name anybody there, his downfall was probably rooted in his success, you know, in the sense that the cork was kind of very rarely put back into a celebrating bottle.
Yes.
And I think he realised after a while that he didn't have to fight anymore, that the name was so great and the reputation was so strong that if you opened the public house and you put the name Donnelly over the door, it was going to pack them in. There was for many years a plaque on the old motor tax office, not a building many people will miss. rare example of kind of brutalism in Dublin city centre. That was one of his pubs, and for many years it was marked by a plaque. But when you read about him, I mean, the stuff is extraordinary. He's described by one contemporary who watches the fight with Cooper. Cooper was a fine, handsome, athletic young fellow. Donnelly, a coarse, repulsive looking man of tremendous strength and muscle. And this idea of him as an almost, you know, an almost monster figure,
yeah,
runs right through all the press. But I think
would that be the English press? That sounds almost like a Punch magazine.
Yeah, doesn't it just? Yeah, the Irish ape, you know, yeah, fighting the Englishman. But yeah, I mean, the Donnybrook Fair, which was a very, very notorious drunken festival.
Yeah.
It kind of was open-ended in terms of how long it would go on for every year. They say that the church in Donnybrook is built on the site of the Donnybrook Fair, almost to atone for the Donnybrook Fair.
And the shot, if you wouldn't associate the shot, yeah, to that, that's for sure.
You certainly wouldn't. But
did he die from drinking too much?
He died on his own premises.
Yeah.
He died at the
job
pub
kind of thing.
Where the motor tax office later was, and he dies at 31 years of age.
Oh my word.
So it's tragic. And the gorgeous Gael, Jack Doyle comes to mind later on in kind of similar circumstances. But what's different?
And what happened to his body after?
That's the thing that makes the Dan Donnelly story just so intriguing. He dies in the early 19th century, but before the Anatomy Act. And what that means is you have what we're known as the resurrectionists, what a great term that is, or sometimes the sack 'em ups or the dig 'em ups. We're still operating in Dublin. Glasnevin Cemetery actually has these really interesting kind of observational towers around it to stop body snatchers. And when Dan goes into Bully's Acre in Dublin 8, just beside the Royal Hospital in Kilmainham, the body is dug up. And there's horror in Dublin that this sporting champion's body could be sold off to, you know, the surgeons or to the Royal College or the like. So they track down where it is, and Donnelly's arm is essentially carried off as a relic, as a trophy by the Dublin crowd. So it goes on this absolutely extraordinary journey.
Was it like they had the arm, but was their arm mummified or preserved in some way?
Yeah, it becomes this kind of mummified arm, and it travels around the world. It travels around Britain at circuses. A publican in Belfast, the Duncairn Arms, buys it and has a residency there for a while. I think he buys it in 1904. Eventually, actually thinks it's a bit disgusting, and he sells it on. And the hideout in Kilcullen. Actually, many listeners might remember seeing this arm in the hideout. It was there for a long, long time. And his biographer, Patrick Myler, makes the point that everyone talks about this arm as a really, you know, enormous thing. But he said it's a pity to dismiss the myth, but Dan's preserved arm is not of abnormal length. It matches the measurements of a man of just above 6 feet, which Donnelly was, when using the guide of an average arm span from fingertip to fingertip, being about the same as a person's height. So, you know, again, the mythology around the arm was so great that it was this enormous thing. But it's just the mummified arm of a great boxer.
And where's the arm now?
It's been everywhere. It was on display in Croke Park back in 2010, and it's in a private collection now. But it's still doing the rounds.
Yeah, you've held this arm. I'm looking at a picture now. You're in the
That's
arm
a good
of
reference.
Matt.
It's a bit like Nelson's head. You know, when the pillar was blown up, there was a paper mache Nelson's head going around Dublin for a while. The real one appeared on stage with the Dubliners. So yeah, there's a couple of Dan Donnelly arms knocking around, but the real one does survive.
Yeah, I'm 62 years of age. I remember as a kid seeing Dan Donnelly's arm in a glass case hanging on the wall in the pub in Kilcullen.
There you go.
With my grandfather. He told me Dan was able to tie his boxing boots without bending down.
Yes.
Because his arms are so long.
Touch his knees without bending down. All these great stories.
Anyway, if you'd like to find out more, as you've a little taste of what a fascinating story that is, that's all taking place in the National Stadium on May the 9th. The historian Donal Fallon will be the host of that. Donal, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2. On News Talk. Conversation that counts.